But it isn't always easy. Managing distress can affect even the strongest warrior.
But I can. I will stay mission ready.
I can. I will
keep my mind and body fit.
Talk to my chaplain.
Be there to listen.
I can. I will.
Know the signs.
Seek care early.
Talk to my health care provider.
Be there to help, listen, and get you through this.
I can. I will
motivate others.
Strive for progress, not perfection.
I can. I will.
Be there for my buddies, no matter what.
Be there for our veterans, no matter what.
And I've got your back, too.
I can, I will. Keep our family safe while you're away.
I can, I will. Think of you every night.
We're in this together.
I got this.
I got this.
I got this.
Take the first step.
There's no better time than now.
Reaching out is a sign of strength. Visit realwarriors.net or call 800-874-2273.
We were rolling down this road in
Anbar Province.
Three personnel carriers
with 16 of us on board.
All of a sudden, there's
a huge explosion.
We knew right away
it was an IED. The first vehicle
got wasted, and those guys took
a huge hit.
Then we started taking
sniper fire and RPGs from the hills.
In today's military, women face the same dangers as men.
It's pretty amazing.
We made it out alive.
But when they come home, women veterans confront a whole different set of challenges, like unique health care issues, or not receiving respect or even acknowledgement for serving in harm's way. DAV understands the problems women veterans face, and we can help. Many DAV advisors are female veterans. They've been there, and they're ready to provide expert guidance. DAV fights to get you the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help.
As we recognize the service of America's men and women in uniform, let's also honor the families who sacrifice so much every day. Military families endure frequent deployments and separations. They carry on while their loved ones are sent into harm's way and wait patiently for their safe return. If you really want to honor a veteran, look for ways to support their families and thank them for their sacrifices. Go to legion.org/honorveterans to find out how you can help.
I had PTSD. Once I was back from Iraq, I was distant from everybody in my family.
We had a reunion of our unit, and you hear these spouses say, "Is your husband doing that? My husband's doing that too. I thought it was just us." And really understanding that, hey, this is a common experience.
I learned more to listen to what he was saying, and that made it easier for me to understand where his pain was coming from.
Resources are available for military families. Learn more at realwarriors.net.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
On Tuesday, we continue. You know, I've got a big problem with somebody stealing our stuff. I'll tell you where it starts from. I got a big problem when somebody steals my stuff. That pisses me off. Oh, you're just going to take my stuff? Oh, really? That's how you think that's going to work? 85 degrees and sunny right now at Camp Lejeune. 93 in 29 Palms under partly sunny skies. 104 in Fallujah at night. Hawaii, 73 degrees early morning and cloudy. Camp Pendleton, 72 and cloudy. And in Quantico, 85 degrees, partly sunny. We continue. Joining me from Northern California, Corporal Type Matt Diba. Matt, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on? Sergeant.
I got to change that, my contact info. Sergeant. Sorry. Hey. Sorry to
forgive you.
Sorry to bust your ass right here live on the radio. All right, so Matt, first of all, what are you doing now?
Right now, be going to school full time, and currently working a summer job.
All right, currently working a summer job. You're during the school year. You work in the Veterans Service Office.
Yeah, I work in the Veterans Service Office at my local community college, but taking a semester off, so you have to be enrolled in summer classes to work there. So I'm not going to summer school. So
got it. summer school sucks. Just like it did when you were a kid. I don't even think they have it anymore. My mom tried to sign me up for that insanity all the time. I was like, Kathleen, what are you, crazy? I'm not going to summer school. First of all, only dorks went to summer school when I was a kid. I was not having that. So that, like, little act of aggression on her part. All right, so, Matt, born and raised where?
Sacramento, California.
Exactly. And you want to know why you know Sacramento's cool? Because in the song California Love, Sacramento prominently represented. In Oakland, Oakland and Sactown, the Bay Area, and back down, that would be Sacramento. They don't talk about La Jolla, Yucaipa, right? Pacific Beach, Del Mar, they don't represent, okay? Sactown does, so.
That's right.
There you go. I gotta bust that out as a bumper then. You'll hear it here. So, you're born and raised in Sacramento. Where'd you go to high school?
Oakmont High School.
Oakmont High School. How does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
The Marine Corps got on my radar, let's see, I joined when I was 20.
Okay.
Actually, I signed up when I was 19, but I was drunk in a bar and ran into a classmate of mine. And, you know, he had just come back from boot camp, and I was not really planning on it, but I was just blabbing my mouth, and he kind of called me on it, and it just so happened that the bartender was, he had gotten out, and he was in the inactive reserves, but he was starting to recruit from the inactive reserves. So he was kind of on his way back in, and that was it, man. They made easy work of me.
So you were talking trash in a bar?
Pretty much, yeah.
And you got your punk card pulled, and the next thing you know, you're on your way to MCRD?
Basically. Well, actually, I mean, I signed up in December, and I didn't leave till August because I was a little pussy.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that? Could you, like, not do a pull-up or some bullshit like that?
No. I did, like, 12 pull-ups. Physically, I've never had a problem with that, but I was just, I was scared.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you, I think that is simply, what makes the Marine Corps different than every other branch of the service. Our boot camp's still scary. It's not like we're gonna indoctrinate you for service in the Marine Corps. That is not what's gonna happen there, man. Everybody goes knowing that they may fail. And it's a unique group of people, both male and female, that look at that and say, yeah, I'll try that. Because most will not because of the failure.
Yeah.
So you may be describing yourself as a pussy at the time, but the fact that you looked at the unknown, having no really family members who talked about boot camp and what you do in week 7 and all the rest of that nonsense, having no other affiliation, you look at that and say, yeah, I'll try that. That immediately makes you different.
Yeah.
No matter if you were scared.
I'll take it.
All right. So you go, you join the Marine Corps, and then you come out of boot camp. What is your MOS?
0231. Intelligence analyst.
Intelligence analyst. Did you want to do that? Did you have an open contract? How'd you get there?
I wanted to. I was originally going to be a machinist. And
a machinist? Like,
yeah. Which I've never met one of those, by the way, my entire time in. but I had a contract to be a machinist, which I still think would have been fun. But I remember talking to my dad. My dad, he was drafted a couple times for Vietnam, but he had a knee injury, so he never went. But some of his best friends died in Vietnam. They were Marines, and he told me, like, don't even think about it. You're not going. I'll disown you. I'll make you a deal. He offered to pay for me to go to school in San Diego, and he'd pay my rent and everything. And I told him no, but he didn't want me to go. And he said, well, if you're going to go, you need to make sure that whatever you do is applicable on the outside. So I told my recruiter this. He goes, "Oh, I got the perfect job for you. You're gonna be like James Bond plus a Marine," which is, you know, just another recruiter lie.
Did he play the music? Near, 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 near. The James Bond music. He didn't play it.
No, he didn't. But he probably should have.
He didn't have it handy because you know those guys.
He was good though. He was good. He was really good.
they can he was sell.
Good. He's still good. I still keep track of him. But I ended up being an intel analyst, which again. Not a whole lot of intel jobs out there for civilians. There are, but I kind of missed that wave, so I think I would have been better off as a machinist, but ended up graduating in June of 2009 from intel school and then got orders to Camp Pendleton.
All right, and then combat deployments, how many?
1 year long.
1 year long in Afghanistan, that's where we cross paths.
That's right.
Talk about that. Good experience, bad experience? What did you think?
A good experience. I would like to go back a lot of days. It was long, but that was just an amazing group of people, and I felt like it was a really important time for us to be there.
And so tell everybody what you can tell. Tell everybody what you did there.
What we did? Let's spend a few months on the watch floor and stuff like that in the COC. And then I went on leave for 2 weeks, came back. And when I came back, I think it was Major Bronzy at the time, right?
At the time, yes.
Kind of had this idea that we were trying to figure out what to do about poppy, because if you burn down a poppy field or you plow a field under that a farmer is growing, now you're just making a new enemy, really. But at the same time, if you let him grow it and they sell it and it goes into that whole production chain, now the Taliban has money. That's how they get their money. So it's like, where can we interdict that process? And it was basically decided that, you know, these guys must be running the finished product out in the open desert away from the city and where all the checkpoints are, because we know they're growing it. We see it everywhere. We know they're processing it. But then after that, it just disappears. So the regiment, along with, I think originally it was BDOC, and it was PSD. PSD.
Yep.
We just kind of set up a team, and we would roll out, and we had 253s.
Helicopters.
Cobras, and some British collection assets that would let us know when something was out in the open desert. And they would run out there and check it out. And then you guys would make the call, right?
Right.
To us.
Yeah.
We'd just be sitting boiling out there on the...
And essentially, Jake, and this was the interesting part about this whole thing, it was, and this is quintessentially American, we don't want to harm the farmer, man. He's just an innocent dude in this whole thing. He would go grow pomegranate if somebody would help him out to get the trees in, and, you know, but opium pays a lot of money, and the Taliban are paying you to grow it. And if you don't grow it, then they're going to come and visit you. If you say, look, I don't have the money to pay the bribes, and they're going to eradicate my crop because the police chief, I'm not in that tribe, and if I grow weed, at least I'll get some money. And the Taliban would show up, and they're like, yeah, that ain't happening. You're growing opium. And then if they didn't, you know, you'd get boiling water or oil dumped on one of your daughters, because the girls aren't as valuable as the boys, or they shoot them in the and kill them. That was normally the second visit. They'd shoot one of your daughters to let you know that they were serious, and next time it might be one of your sons. It's just brutal. So, you know, looking for a way to impact, to kind of, what our mission was to get after their wallet, was to control Hellman and the Poppy, I don't know if control is the right word, but to interdict disrupt. What was happening. Disrupt is the best word. It's actually a tactical mission. Disrupt is what we're trying to do, which would then impact their ability to finance what they were doing. And so then, but we did not want to screw the farmer and make him an enemy, as Matt said. And then, so this little operation, which was pretty successful, and Matt was out there doing that. Talk about the first time you like yoked up something big. How fired up were you?
Oh man. That was a adrenaline rush for sure. We'd stop these guys and search them, and it didn't take long before we hit our first car that had probably, I don't know, 300 or 400 pounds of black tar opium on it. And
that's right. Hold on. Said, just for everybody listening out there, that's right. That much black tar opium. Okay. Anybody who's watched any of the drug movies, anybody who knows the anything about the drug trade knows that that's a ton of money. And, you know, this thing's zooming through the desert too, you know, not near anything else, you know, and, we have ways of watching stuff, and we'd start seeing something, you know, going through the desert at a pretty high rate of speed. And then, Matt and the guys he was with, they would get actioned against it. And you guys would go chase them down in helicopters, right? The Cobras would initially make the vehicle stop?
Yeah, the Cobras would, pop flares and stuff like that. By the time we landed, they were scared out of their minds. A few times we came across guys that had weapons, but they were on the ground 100 yards away by the time we got on the ground. And I would have loved to see that, but, you know, you can never really see what the Cobras are doing.
Yeah, I'm sure
it was funny.
In talking to the pilots, they loved doing it. So it was Cobras stopping a vehicle. That's what they did. And so they would, like, as Matt said, they'd shoot flares, they'd fly low, they'd kick up dust, they'd do all kinds of stuff. But they were loving it, man. They were out there doing it. And then the two bigger helicopters would come in. And then Matt was one of the intel guys with them, and they had security people and engineers with them, and they would go check out what was going on, and they found some gigantic hauls of black tar opium. Exciting stuff, though. That was an awesome mission you got to be a part of.
It was amazing. I drove a Toyota Tacoma essentially into the back of a 53, loaded down with opium. That was an experience of a lifetime.
Do you have a good picture of it?
I do.
Nice.
I could send them to you if you want.
Yeah, please do. No, I mean, some of it, like, we get these pictures of what we get out of these operations, and you'd be like, wow, that's the finished product, and somebody's getting their ass handed to them because, I mean, some of the dollar figures that would be associated with the black tar opium were crazy. And you're like, oh man, somebody's ass is in trouble tonight. And so Matt Diva, he joins us from Northern California, where he's going to school, and courtesy of the GI Bill. You like that GI Bill? Good deal.
Great deal. Amazing.
All right, and Matt, I want to talk about you. So you come back home and you start drinking, right? Had you always been a drinker?
Yeah. I definitely drank a lot more when I came home from Afghanistan, but I had a few brushes, with that kind of stuff even before. I kind of got in trouble at the schoolhouse, and then I almost got kicked out, actually, right after I got to the fleet, for smoking spice.
Spice?
That's right. Yeah.
So talk about smoking spice, because you know, everybody gets warned, hey, there's this stuff called spice and blah, 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 It's a synthetic drug. It doesn't stay in the system. We don't know if we can track it. We're not sure, you know, we've threatened all the tobacco shops out in town. If they sell it, we're going to blacklist them, blah, blah. So it was a big deal. So first of all, tell everybody what spice is that doesn't remember. And then,
it's some kind of, supposedly, like you said, synthetic THC. That's what they were saying back then. I think it's closer to like bath salts now. It's brutal stuff. And, you know, no one was really talking about it back then. I never heard anything from the command. I just heard from other Marines like, you know, it's legal, this or that, and which really, if you know the UCMJ, you know that even if you can go buy it, that doesn't make it legal if you're getting high off of it.
Hello.
But, I was going through some hard times, and my brother had just been in a really bad accident, and we weren't sure as a family whether or not he was going to be the same again. He fractured his skull in three places. And, and I got off work early one day from this training thing. And, I was a TFC and my sergeant said, well, I'm going surfing and you are not going back to the shop. Okay. So I just went back to the barracks and started drinking and, later on, my roommate got home. He was kind of into that stuff, and we ended up smoking. And just so happened that the what is it called? The Substance Abuse Control Officer.
The SACO.
So happened to be the staff NCO on duty that day, and probably one of about five Marines on Pendleton that really knew what spice was in August of 2009. And he asked me if I smoked anything, and I said yes, because I was out on the catwalk playing my guitar like a hippie, high as a kite. And next thing I know, I'm being arrested, and shortly after that, standing in front of the first sergeant the next morning, and he basically promised me that then I was going to be a failure and go back home to Sacramento, an embarrassment, and not last. He said, I promise you will not last. Well, it's 18 months in this Marine Corps.
Wow.
Fortunately for me, he was wrong.
So let me ask you, did that whole thing shake you up? Because a lot of guys hit trouble and they're like, hey, screw it. I don't care. You know, I don't care if I finish my, you know, they're, you know, young and stupid, right? And defiant because they have stuff going on in their life and they're not, you know, they're struggling to deal with it. What did you feel about it? Did you say, man, I screwed this up and I got to unscrew myself, or were you still defiant about it? What were your thoughts?
No, I accepted responsibility for that from the moment I got caught. And I think that's why I have an honorable discharge today, is because I was honest and I accepted responsibility and I did everything in my power to make up for that. And Sergeant Major Zikafus used to call us the Spice Boys, and me and the other Marine, we were in the same boat. And being intel guys, I think it was just a combination of, you know, we had really good staff NCOs and officers that believed in us. We had a good reputation. We were intel guys with clearances at a time when they really needed us. If we were, I don't know, any other MOS, I'm not sure. But at that time, during that ramp up, like, they couldn't afford to kick us out. But,
and truth be told, you wouldn't have been kicked out for one offense. However, you have very sensitive clearance, as you said, and that would have got you on a lot of people's radar. Talk about Sergeant Major Zickenfuss and the kind of guy. Did he sit you down, talk to you? How did you cross paths with him relative to the whole spice event?
He had just gotten to the regiment, like right when that happened, and after we got NJP'd by the colonel, who later became a General O'Donohue, he pulled us in and he said, look, I think you guys knew exactly what you were doing, and I don't care. Basically, unscrew yourself and rebound from this.
So he challenged you.
Up again. Yeah, yeah.
And I'll tell you, talk about the kind of guy he is. He's a pretty awesome guy, yes?
Amazing.
And when a guy like that challenges, what did it make you feel like? Did he give you words of encouragement? Did he chew your ass, or did he do both?
I mean, it was kind of both. Even an ass chewing from his is encouraging. it definitely lit a fire under me. I was already, on the outside, I tried, I had like an internal conflict going on or whatever, but on the outside, I was pretty much a perfect Marine up until that time. But I was just obsessed from that point on to be like the best. It was like sickening. I remember, like, I sound like such a boot saying this, but we never had wall locker inspections, right? They'd always threaten them though, but like, I used to pray for a wall locker inspection because my clothes and everything were so pristinely folded. I mean, it took me like 3 hours to do laundry, folding a stack ankle socks, like 2 feet straight up.
Why?
Like one stack.
Why? Why? Because you were determined to prove that you were
like
better
everything.
Than
everything. Everything. Anything I could do to stand out, I did. 298.
What's up with that?
Hey, actually, it was the lieutenant's fault.
Always. It's always the lieutenant's fault. Hey, and as a father of two of them, they didn't bring their bikes out of the rain either. So what do you expect them to be perfect?
Okay. No,
they're like you. They were young, eating their boogers and stuff like that. Okay,
that's
so give them a break.
That's true. I remember.
All right, Matt, we got to take a break. When I come back, when we come back, what I want to talk about is you come back and then you start drinking. And then you wind up out in the woods and up in Lake Tahoe, and then then your life changes, and now you're doing great work with veterans in addition to going back to school, and so a great story. But a lot of guys struggle with when they get off active duty and they're a little bit alone and they're adrift a little bit, and you have girl problems, and just seems like it's closing in. So we'll talk about that. Yes.
Sounds good.
All right. Sergeant, I got to correct myself, Matt Diver, from a native of the great state of California, up in Northern California, and a homie of mine from Sacramento, California. We reconnected on a plane up to Sacramento one evening. So he joins the program. We'll continue with that next here on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I had PTSD. Once I was back from Iraq, I was distant from everybody in my family. We had a reunion of our unit, and you'd hear these spouses say, is your husband doing that? My husband's doing that too. I thought it was just us. And really understanding that, hey, this is a common experience.
I learned more to listen to what he was saying, and that made it easier for me to understand where his pain was coming from.
Resources are available for military families. Learn more at realwarriors.net.
Life in the military is one of service and sacrifice. For some, that sacrifice includes physical and mental injuries or trauma that will affect their lives forever. Please join with the American Legion in recognizing and supporting our wounded warriors and their families. We need to show them that we truly are a grateful nation. We cannot allow them to be forgotten and left to fend for themselves.
For a leader, there is nothing more important than dealing with one of your soldiers who you are concerned about their emotional dealings with what we have asked them to do. You got to make sure the soldiers know that you're open at any time, any day, and you got to make sure your junior leaders are leading the same way you are. Are they encouraging soldiers instead of discouraging them from going to seek help if they need help?
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.
We were rolling down this road in
Anbar Province.
Three personnel carriers.
With 16 of us on board.
All of a sudden, there's
a huge explosion.
We knew right away.
It was an IED. The first vehicle got
wasted. And those guys took
a huge hit.
Then we started taking
sniper fire and RPGs from the hills.
In today's military, women face the same dangers as men.
It's pretty amazing.
We made it out alive.
But when they come home, women veterans confront a whole different set of challenges, like unique health care issues, or not receiving respect or even acknowledgement for serving in harm's way. DAV understands the problems women veterans face, and we can help. Many DAV advisors are female veterans. They've been there, and they're ready to provide expert guidance. DAV fights to get you the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help.
I had PTSD. Once I was back from Iraq, I was distant from everybody in my family. We had a reunion of our unit, and you hear these spouses say, "Is your husband doing that? My husband's doing that too. I thought it was just us." And really understanding that, hey, this is a common experience.
I learned more to listen to what he was saying, and that made it easier for me to understand where his pain was coming from.
Warriors should know that resources are available. Learn more at realwarriors.net.
You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Deal with it. And all you haters out there. So I can hear them laughing too. They hate our theme song, don't they?
You hear that?
They do. You know that. You bust us out and everybody from California just starts bobbing their head. The rest of the hillbillies, they don't like it.
Just jealous.
Exactly. They don't have Tupac and Dr. Dre talking about like Tupelo, Mississippi. They don't sing about that. Only Elvis does. Nice. All right, we continue. Sergeant Matt Diba joins us. Okay, so come back from Afghanistan. A year there is a long time to be doing that stuff. You came back. Did it change you as a guy? Did you feel like you were changed?
Well, in what way? Yeah, definitely. I don't think anyone can do that. Combat deployment or not, I just think that much time away and that much stress, has an impact on anyone.
Talk about the stress. Talk about every day working how many hours? 12, 14 hours a day, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Does anyone
all
does,
the time?
Does anybody
anything to do?
Does anybody want to hear that you don't feel good or you're kind of tired when everybody's working what seven days a week?
Absolutely not.
No, it's like
the fact of life. Everyone feels the same way. It's no, you don't.
And then you come home and people say, "Well, do you guys get days off?" Like, what? Like weekends and stuff? Like, no.
What? No. What would be the point of that?
Yeah. Like, what are you gonna do? Go to the lake?
Go for a stroll around town.
Go to the lake. Go hang out. But you know, I think that you know, unless you did what if you work in the COC, that you couldn't really do that. But I know a lot of the sections tried to at least give you know guys a morning where they could sleep in and at least kind of you know decompress a little bit because it is. 7 days a week, you know, it is 14, 16 hours a day, go back to your hooch, go to sleep, get up, go grab something to eat, and go back to work for a year. And I'll tell you what, I don't care who you are. That is, and the work is, for instance, what Matt did in the COC is we're trying to kill people, right? Somebody pings on a cell phone somehow, and the special people say, yo, you know, Target, you know, Disneyland is right here, we think. And now we start collecting, and we start actioning people, and we want to kill them. And he's a bad guy. We know it. And so, and I'm looking at Matt, and Matt's job is to tell me, you know, what all these different collection assets are saying, because we're ready to kill this dude, but we are not exactly sure if it's the right dude or not. And there's a moral in the story. If your friend's a bad dude, do not use his cell phone. That could be a bad mistake for you. Anyway.
That's right.
So I'm looking at a guy who's probably, how old were you, 22, 23?
At the time?
Yeah.
Afghanistan?
Yeah.
I turned 23 in Afghanistan.
So he's 23 years old, never done this, right? This is my third combat deployment, and things are serious, and they're happening fast, and he's got to be right. And when I look at him, and they're not right, and we're trying to make decisions, they get their ass handed to him. Okay? Like, hey, you got to tell me this, or you got to tell me this. And he's got to learn, too. But a lot of pressure on intel guys to make sure they paint the picture right. If they're not sure, say they're not sure. And they're young guys. They're doing it for the first time. Right? And you got the regimental commander in there. Whoever's going to approve us killing this dude is standing there. What? And so, okay, but it's not that, like, way once, like, every 6 weeks. You're doing that every day, sometimes multiple times a day, as you prosecute different targets and as different things happen. So it's a unique experience. Yeah, Matt?
Very unique.
But tell me.
That's a good way to put it.
Who's the best major in the Marine Corps, if you got to do that, to hang out with every day?
Oh, man. There's so many good ones.
And there's only one, okay? You know that. let me tell you. We had a bunch of them.
Well, on an airplane in Sacramento.
Well, don't even go there.
If you're flying there from John Wayne, I guess.
Thank you.
McNamara.
But again, everybody's heard the quality of guy that we had there. Officer enlisted, it didn't matter. Just great guys across the board. And you've heard a bunch of them on this program already. You've heard Kurt Knowles, Rudy, one of our air officers. You're going to hear at some point Luke McConnell, who's another awesome guy. You'll hear Chris Bronzy. You've heard General Furness. You've heard Lieutenant Colonel Schwartz. You've heard Mike Musselman. These are just all the guys that we work with on a daily basis. You've heard Paul Gage. You've heard Master Guns Couturier. These are all like studs in their own right. Matt, yes, no?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the dream team.
Yeah. I mean, these are the guys we worked with every day. And when Matt says dream team, you know, we're not joking. If you had 100 guys to pick from, you know, these guys would be, if there was the top 20 guys, these guys would be like 15 of the top 20 guys that you're talking about. And you get to go with all of them. And so, pretty cool experience when you're under that much stress to be around that many good people. And we've already talked about Sergeant Major Zickenfuss. Stud. He's now the Sergeant Major of TUMAF at Camp Lejeune.
I heard.
Yeah, that's what kind of guy he is, and he's and there's discussion about him becoming the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps because he's that good. So these kind of guys, but given all that, still a lot of stress to deal with, and how does it work when you come home, good or bad?
I can't speak for everybody, but for myself, it wasn't good. I know that. Even though the experience was amazing, I know, and the further away from it I get, the more I become aware that something was wrong, and start to talk about it with with friends and family members and stuff like that, and they confirm it. It's like, hey, thanks for telling me then, you know, they won't do it. If you're counting on the people around you, except for probably the ones extremely close to you, like a wife or girlfriend, because they'll probably tell you out of anger. Because usually it's going to manifest itself in a way that is very unpleasant to them. And nobody, or very few people really get it, especially us, right, when it's happening to us.
No, because we think we're handling it, that we're okay, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know I got pissed. I know I got pissed, but I'm doing okay with my stuff.
Yeah, or what do you want from me? Like, what do you want from me? I'm doing everything I can. And I'm just trying to feel okay, and whatever makes me feel okay, that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it every day. And for me, that was drinking.
Wow. All right, so you start drinking. Now, when you talk about drinking, what are you talking about? How much?
Enough to black out probably 50% of the time. So
when you were drinking, you would
fifth of whiskey or
wind up drunk and blacked out 50% of the time.
Yeah, it hadn't always been like that. But after Afghanistan and the next two, you know, till I quit, basically, it just started happening more and more often, and I really, it got to a point where essentially I was drinking to blackout, and I was trying to get there as fast as I could, because then I don't, you know, what do you have to worry about then?
All right,
that's a great thing about being an alcoholic in the Marine Corps, is that more often than not, you will be taken care of.
You mean in terms of what, being able to find people to go drink with, or somebody will, at some point will
people
will
to drink with? There's no shortage of people to drink with, but there's also the best friends that you'll ever have that are there to make sure. I should have been. I was in the back of a cop car in San Diego, in PB, right outside Denny's.
All right.
In the back of a cop car, they're ready to arrest me, and Sergeant Bruneman has a conversation with these officers. And next thing you know, I'm no longer in the cop car, and I no longer have handcuffs on, and we're on the way to hotel. So, we do take care of each other.
All right, so you get taken care of, but you keep drinking, right?
Yeah, I do. And I didn't drink every day, because I couldn't, and I was still trying to be a good Marine.
Right.
And, but when I could drink, I made the most of it. So it was mostly weekends and the occasional, and things were kind of relaxed, you know, at the regiment when we got back for a while.
Yeah.
So there were some Tuesday nights and Wednesday nights and Dana Point and stuff like that. But
so it gets worse.
It gets worse.
How does taking your own life get on your radar?
Well, a lot of hurt relationships between me and the people around me. I'd gotten out of the Marine Corps. Things got really bad right towards the end, and I went and I got some help from Military One Source, and I go see this counselor, and I sit on his couch, and I'm talking to him for about 2 minutes. And he says, you know, there's some stuff that I could do that would help you, but I think that you are an alcoholic, and I think you should go to AA. He said, been working for me for 55 years. This dude was old. He got sober at 25, and he had 55 years sober. So,
wow.
So I kind of tried that, but I didn't really go all in. I thought that being sober was like the worst thing that could ever happen to me, because at that time it was the only thing that made me feel okay. So if you take that away, what do I have? And so I attempted, I stayed sober for a couple months, and the girlfriend came back, and things were kind of okay. And then I'm up in Tahoe, my mom has a cabin up there, and we're at this wedding, and I black out. Tell the groom that he married a
you were at a wedding?
I was at a wedding, yes. My girlfriend.
Thank you.
My girlfriend's wedding, or her friend's, one of her best friend's wedding.
Her, okay, so one of your girlfriend's best friend's wedding. One of her best friends. Okay. All right.
Yeah, and I ruined the wedding, basically. I blacked out, called her every name in the book, and started coming to, basically, around 3 in the morning and trying to figure out, trying to put the pieces back together of what just happened. And she's like, you know, don't ever talk to me again. And at this point, I've got nothing going for me. I don't have a plan to go to school, really. I don't have, I'm not in the Marine Corps. I don't have my team around me. I'm just alone and extremely depressed. And I knew that I couldn't stop. I knew I had to stop, but I couldn't imagine living life sober. So I end up in the woods down the street from my mom's cabin with my .45 and thinking that that's a really good idea for me. And I've heard this from a lot of people in recovery that they have a moment of clarity. And thank God that happened for me, because I know it's not the case for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But I had a moment of clarity right there, and I thought, you know what? I know that I could have tried harder. I was willing to accept that even if my life was, say, boring sober, I was willing to accept boring. That was completely wrong. My life's more amazing than it's ever been, and it's because I'm sober. But I didn't know that at the time. But I was so miserable that I was willing to accept that over suicide at that moment. And I came home and I started going to meetings and getting help. I went to the vet center here, and we talked. We had some, I think, 6 sessions regarding post-traumatic stress. That was August 19th, 2013. The last time that was my first day sober. I've been sober since then, and it's life is good, but there's still a lot of work to do.
Matt, when you went to the vet center, did the person you talked to, were they a veteran or were they not a veteran?
He was a veteran, actually.
He was?
He was a Marine. And he was helpful. But after the one-on-one sessions, they wanted to do group sessions. And that kind of turned me off. I know a lot of guys struggle with this, but like feeling like, okay, I'm making too big of a deal out of this thing. I don't really, this is for people that have it worse than me.
Right.
And, I think that's a mistake.
That you should have hung in there and stayed with the group thing?
Possibly. I mean, I think that,
You know what? I don't think it's a mistake. I think everybody finds their own way through, you know.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And
I'll tell you so you're sitting there and you've done what you've done, or I've done what and you're in a group and you're listening to guys who are, let's say, part of Route Clearance Unit. They're getting blown up all the time. And you know, what's your first instinct? I'm a pussy. I don't belong here with these guys. And you feel that. So what's the ultimate effect? You clam up. You don't talk because, you know, you're not worthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so, and it would be the same thing for somebody that was pumping fuel in Kuwait who is struggling with whatever they're struggling with. And they're in the same group with Matt. And Matt's talking about flying around on these helicopters and addicting drug guys and hopping out and doing this stuff. And he looks and he says, yeah, I should be in here with him. So, I mean, everybody goes through it. So I don't think there is a, you know, I should have stayed or I shouldn't, you know, I should not have stayed, kind of a thing. I think you just find your own way. What's comfortable for you. And I just, my point asking you was the guy a vet. I think there should be more vets at the vet centers. That's what they were originally designed in the post-Vietnam era. Now civilians occupy most of those positions. And the thing that the Vietnam veteran wanted was, when I walk in there, I want to talk to a veteran. I want to talk to probably somebody who's been a combat veteran. So that he looks at me and goes, yo, dude, what's up? And you know you're home. Like, hey, this guy gets it. This guy's from my tribe. And I know I can talk to him. Because, like, how do I tell my story to somebody who's never been there, never done that, doesn't know what I'm even talking about? And what are they going to look at me? And so, anyway. Interesting. Talk to us about, so you continue to go to AA meetings and now you mentor other guys, right?
I do, yeah. So I get what we call a sponsor, and a person that takes you through the steps, and I did that, and I haven't had a desire to drink in a really long time. And
Why?
Well, I mean, alcoholism is extremely misunderstood. Really, it's the drinking is just a symptom of what's really going on. What's really going on is I can't live life on life's terms. For whatever reason, I'm scared. I'm self-centered. I'm selfish, you know, whatever it is. And we call that basically a spiritual malady, lacking, right? The things I think make me happy, the things I think will make me happy actually hurt me, you know, chasing women, all that stuff, cars, money, whatever, trying to fix. It's like trying to paint a car to make it run better. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So
you don't drink now because, you know, you went through the program, but you don't, I won't say conquered, but you have the physical desire for alcohol. You have that in its place. And you know, intellectually, you know, in your mind, you know, you're in a better place in where your mind is.
You could say that. I mean, to a certain degree, I think that, you know, this might turn some people off, but I rely on a higher power to keep me sober. I don't think.
Uh-oh, yeah, they all just rolled their eyes and said, I'm out. Right?
Yeah.
You know, and we know this because of the way Marines are. I'll tell you what, I talked to Chris Bronzy, a battle buddy of mine. I was asking him how they deal with their anger. And I was talking to another friend of mine, Luke McConnell. And I talked to Luke, and he said, yeah, I don't know that you want to talk to me. Mac, I'm with you. I'm still struggling with it. And then I talked to Bronzy, and Bronzy says to me, I don't want to tell you. And these are buddy Bronzy's battle buddy times two. We were in Ramadi, first met there. I said, Bronz, come on, man. We're battle buddies. You got it. He says, no, you're going to get mad at me. I said, I'm not going to get mad at me. He said, no, I know you. You're going to get mad at me. And I said, I swear to God, I won't get mad at you. And he said, okay. I said, so how do you deal with it? And he says, God. And I yelled, God damn it, Bronzy, how could you give that to me? I'm looking for help and you give me God? He's like, see, I told you, Mac, I knew you were going to get mad at me and you promised me you wouldn't and you're doing it. So I'm out. And, so talk to us about your faith. Like, how did that, have you always had the kind of faith that,
No, not at all.
So it's just since getting sober that you realize that there's a spiritual piece of this that you needed and were missing?
Yeah. That's,
wow.
That's basically what the steps are designed to do is like,
you,
hey, contact with,
you become that, that, you become that guy now.
I mean, I'm not that guy. I'm not going to show up to your door with a freaking Bible. I guarantee you that.
You're not that guy?
I'm
you
not
know,
that guy.
You know there's Marines listening going, okay, he's a reformed alcoholic.
Now he's
found the Lord. Oh, God. Now we're not going to be able to hang out anymore.
No. No.
It's a better life, yes?
Oh, yeah, it's a better life. But those days where drinking sounds like a good idea. I think it will always sound like a good idea. And I had a lot of fun for a while doing it.
No, it's a good time. Without a doubt, it's a good time, right?
Yeah. Kidding me? Marine Corps ball? Vegas?
Oh, are you kidding me? My daughter. Dad, I think he's got the flu. Why? Got sick. Yeah, I don't think that's a flu there, Colleen. Wow. Matt, let me read you an email. Mac, does Matt have contact info for people that help? I'm struggling with the same kind of stuff. Does he recommend the vet center? How do I plug into if I'm looking to either help myself or help a friend? So Matt, would people that have heard you today and are looking for help themselves, how do they get help?
Well, there's resources everywhere. That's the beautiful thing about the Marine Corps. If you want to drink, it's a great place to drink. And if you want to get help, it's a great place to get help. But you can't be afraid of that. A lot of us have just way too much pride and think that it's weakness to go get help. But it is actually a sign of strength. And for me, I think Military One Source saved my life. There was other things that were kind of leading me in this direction. Lieutenant Colonel Matthews was one of them. Kind of planted a seed in me, and
he scared the shit out of everybody. He came. General Furness brought him in to talk to us. And aside from sitting on the outfield grass that was soaking wet, my ass was itching on that day incredibly. So I stood up because I was a field grade officer. He tells a story about being drunk after Vietnam, right?
Yeah.
And, yep. you know, Marines are listening. And then he said, I want to say the line that got my attention. Matt doesn't remember it, but the line that got my attention was, I'd filled my body so often with alcohol that I could no longer function sexually with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was half paying attention. I would say, what did he just say? And he said, yeah, that's what I just said. He said, I couldn't function. And I'm not a drinker anyway. I thought, oh, you guys who drink, you better pay attention to that one because that's not happening. But so you heard him and that made a dent as well.
Yeah, well, other parts of the story.
Right.
he eventually helped me see reality for what it was. But Military One Source, I think that you can't go wrong anywhere you go. It's not about going to the right place. It's just about action. Take some kind of action to get help, and people will push you in the direction that you need to go. You don't have to know. You don't have to have it all planned out. Do something. Get help. Talk to someone that can help you, and they will. I guarantee it.
All right. Matt, will you come back next week and talk about AA?
Sure.
Okay, because we're out of time, but I want to have you back, and I want to kind of talk about AA because, you know, we come from a culture that you say AA, everybody rolls their eyes like, here we go. Or what Chris Bronzy said, I don't want to tell you, God, like, oh, man, come on. We ridiculed that stuff. And so I want you to come back and lay out the program, why it works, how it helped you. Because, I mean, as you said, your comeback is from the woods in Tahoe with a .45, right, contemplating ending your life. And to where you are today, first of all, I want to say how proud I am of you, and I know I speak for a lot of guys who you call battle buddies that say, we're glad you turned your life around. We're glad you're headed in the right direction, and proud to call you our battle buddy, because that takes some balls to do that. And happy you're in a better place and headed for great things. And so want to have you back, though, and talk about those things that we might ridicule, but that, in fact, save people's lives. So we'll do that next week.
I'd love to. Yeah, thank you.
All right. And Military One Source, if you're struggling, Matt, you say you probably saved your life.
Guaranteed.
Guaranteed. Wow. Okay. Hey, bud, thank you for the visit. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
No, awesome. I'll be in touch, and then we'll set something up and come back next week, and we'll talk about AA.
Sounds good.
All right. There you have it. Sergeant type from Northern California, Matt Diva. Hey, come on. Awesome. Awesome men, you know, who do this stuff. He's a young guy. Getting yelled at. He's a young guy getting yelled at. But, great guys who, you know, and then all the elements of it. And you see this in stories all the time, right? Out. So the infrastructure that's been around them, that supported them, no longer there. A lot of times it involves a relationship gone bad. You're alone, isolated, and you're drinking, and you reach for a firearm. Bad stuff. The Gunner gonna join us up in Minnesota. Mike and Mike next on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.